Hi, and welcome to episode 5 of The Debrief Show. Today is a rerun of a previously live recording that I did with Will Grover, who works alongside me a lot at Simply Amazing Training. We're talking about how to keep people engaged in longer meetings and virtual meetings, because it is tricky. We understand that. How do you get those quieter people to speak up and to actually share their views and opinions? How do you stop the louder people over-talking and giving too many of their opinions? We want to make sure that all of the people in the team get a chance to contribute so that your results actually reflect all of your team, not just the louder part of it. And with virtual, it can be even harder, can't it, to get people engaged. We're going to share tips and tricks to make sure that you get the people to give their input on virtual, in person, however you do it, tips and techniques to get people involved. And you're going to find out why adding a car park, it makes it even more psychologically safe for your people to contribute. So today exactly is about making sure we ban boring. Now, virtual meetings and longer meetings are essential. Some people might say just don't have them at all, but let's assume you have to have some longer meetings and some virtual meetings. The plan is to show you how to make sure they just aren't boring. So let's hear from some people if they've joined us now live. Some people might be watching us on replay. Hi to those as well. How do you feel about longer meetings then, Will? Not necessarily ours, because clearly they're amazing, but we work with clients. What have you observed when you've seen other clients' longer meetings or their virtual meetings? What do you observe?
I think a fair assessment would be I probably had all of those answers at some point or another. It sometimes depends on the subject matter, which would depend on the person attending, what's being covered. You know, maybe they love it because it's like, oh, I love this content, I love this person, and I love what he's telling me or what he's offering me. And sometimes it's really down the other end of the scale that you can visually see people glazing over.
Yeah, yeah. What I've seen in typical longer meetings is there's normally a couple of people who are racing ahead and they're like leading the charge. And then there's lots of people left along the path, you know, a bit desperate. So some people are going really quickly. But the question is, are they going in the right direction? Have they spent enough time looking at where they're meant to be going? Or are they just rushing ahead, potentially in the wrong direction? If you've left some people behind, that's value from those people that we aren't getting if they're left behind. And then there's just some other people who are distracted, wandering off, lost, bored, and they're just not motivated to be engaged in the content, right? So typically that's what we see in longer meetings. So feel free to drop in the comments whatever you experience in longer meetings or virtual meetings. But we're going to go through 3 things today. We're going to go from recognizing that there's lost value in these longer or virtual meetings into how to make sure that people feel included and their skill sets are included. Then we're going to talk about when people are sort of stuck and lost on those meetings and how to make sure that they are in flow and they're focused on the meetings. And then lastly, we're going to talk about ways of working, WOWs, ways of working. Okay, so let's just work our way through those 3 things. When we lose people along the way, we've got lost value. So it's not just about being nice. We're actually losing their value. And what we want to do is make sure we include people so that we can experience their value. And you can see that everybody brings value to the meeting. And I think some people miss this, don't they, Will? Like they think they're, I don't know if they consciously think they're the only people that add value, but maybe they think, like we talk about quieter and not so quiet people in a minute, but maybe they think because other people aren't speaking, they don't have value. Have you experienced that?
Yeah, they're not a subject expert, for example. So how can they add value? Well, sometimes we know that if you're a subject matter expert, you're so in the weeds that you can't see things from a different or fresh perspective. So until you've experienced that by bringing people in and you go, oh yeah, I hadn't thought about it in that way, it can feel like, you know, I'm the only one here who's going to add any value. And particularly if you're the person presenting the content, right? So you put a lot of thought and attention into this, you come up, may head up a project, you might be in charge of something, a deliverable, and of your value then is intrinsic. You might just say, you know, I'm just letting people know what I'm doing rather than trying to seek value from them. It's as much about our mindset as it is about thinking about the audience too in that respect.
Yeah, and you know, I see a lot of people, you're right, you know, say like I'm the subject matter expert and the other people going, well, what value do I bring to this? Because I don't know anything about presentations or whatever it might be. But when we actually look at it, there's lots of different personality styles and they may bring their specific values. In fact, that's what we're going to talk about next week. I'm going to have Melanie or Dom on. It's one person, Melanie and Dom, the same person. She's going to come on and we're going to talk together about that, you know, our personality styles and the values we bring. But often you can find that the detailed blue energy, as we call it, can bring in so much benefit with the structure. So instead of having that path where people are rushing off ahead, going in the wrong direction, nobody's looked at all the facts or figures, they can really help bring structure to the actual meeting, even if they don't know any content. So you're absolutely right. Everyone can bring value. And just a final point before we move on that is people have to feel safe, and it's called psychological safety, which we talk about a lot in our trainings, don't we? Well, they have to feel safe in order to be able to deliver their value. I don't know if you just want to say a couple of words on that psychological safety.
Yeah, so it's setting up a structure, a format, some ways of working, which we'll talk about later on, that allow people up front to know that their contribution is going to be heard and valued. So you're kind of telling people up front, this is what we'd like from you, we'd appreciate it from you, and this is how you do it. So you can signpost the exact way in which the people can contribute throughout the whole thing. And psychological safety is really about it being okay to interact, to be wrong, ask questions, share your opinion. But we have to be kind of explicit, really. It's a cultural piece, which is why it comes up a lot in the work that we do with companies, and starting that culture as early as possible and then reminding people that that's what we're aspiring for all the time is really, really important in order to help people maybe overcome some nerves about contributing in the first place.
And we talk about the ways of working in the last section as well, won't we? We'll come back to really practical ways of making this happen, not just talking about it, but really practical ways of making it happen. So we've got a comment actually in from Shari, thank you, on LinkedIn, which relates pretty much to this point, I think. So the next point I'm going to share with you about making sure people feel included is that some people need to shut up and some people need to speak up a little bit. You know, maybe I'm saying it too bluntly, but you know, I'm one of life's talkers, and I've had to learn, and it's still tricky for me, but I've had to learn to shut up. And other people who are a bit quieter and a bit more reserved need to learn to speak up, but they have to have that safety. They have to feel safe to do that. So Sherry has said, you're right. Often colleagues with very good points don't speak up. How do I best create an environment for them to do that? And that's what we're going to be talking about in conversational turn-taking, for example. So once you feel psychologically safe, here's a technique for you, Sherry, you can use this. Is to agree beforehand that you're going to use conversational turn-taking, or you can just introduce it. Might seem a bit weird depending on the environment, whether that's the sort of thing you do or not. But if not, you can talk about it up front and introduce it as a way of working or not. But conversational turn-taking is where we go around the room and we let everybody know that they're going to have a space to speak, so that those people who are naturally more quiet know that they don't have to interrupt in order to grab their chance to speak. They know that it's going to come round them. We agree in order, and everybody does it in the same order every time. And that order is like them guaranteed. So I know that I'm going to speak after Will. And it's not in every conversation, but it's when you need to get everybody included. So if we've run, presenting an idea, we then might go, right, conversational turn-taking, let's give feedback on that idea, starting with. And we start very specifically with ideally somebody who's at what's called ambivert, like a little bit extrovert and a little bit introvert. So they're happy to speak up, but they're not the loudest. But they're happy to speak up. We don't want to pick on the quieter ones to speak first, which might be your natural thought. Well, they're not speaking. Let's put them first. But they're going to want some time to process what's been said or the ideas, and they don't want to be the first one to speak. It's going to put them on edge. The idea is not to test them and make them feel uncomfortable. So that's the first mistake some people make, is making them speak first. But we want them to speak maybe two or three in, right? So we get some people are happy to speak, but not overspeak. Then we get the introverted preferences in speaking. So the sort of super introverted preferences might be in the middle of that sandwich, if you like. Then we go to mildly extrovert, and we finish with the super extroverts right at the end. I mean, that's already challenging. In fact, I'm thinking back to a training wheel that we did once. And if the super extrovert is listening now, they will know who they are. And they weren't that comfortable with speaking last. Do you remember that?
I do. And by the way, you know, the super extroverts at the end will usually have something to say, even if everything has been said, and that's fine. It can validate what somebody who's less extrovert has already said, which is nice confidence building for them. But equally, with the conversational tone taking, we've had it where somebody who is quieter will be given the opportunity to speak, but have nothing to say. And that's absolutely fine as well. At least they've been given that opportunity to say nothing. Or just agree with everything that's been said already.
Yeah. And you still want them to speak. So they still say nothing, you know, I've got nothing extra to add. So they do still speak. They don't say pass, because pass isn't a commitment to speaking, right? So they say, oh, I haven't got anything extra to add, or I broadly agree. One of the things that we talk about in ways of working, which is, I do have lots of things I could say, but none of them are going to change the shape of this conversation. That's a good technique for the extroverts. For us to speak less is for us to say, I broadly agree. And then also to remember, just on that conversational turn taking, that's really important, is where the senior people go, either, you know, senior in structure, or maybe senior because they're seen as more influential because they've been there for longer. But if they're more sort of perceived to influence the answers, what we want to do is put them towards the end as well. So often the most senior person in the room will go last, because what will happen if you put the leader speaks first? What's going to happen, Will? We've seen it, haven't we?
They will do exactly that. And they'll cover off as much as they like to, and fill in as many gaps as they possibly can, which doesn't allow people to think or contribute.
Yeah. And we'll all agree with you, like some...
Because we must.
Some presidents of countries might just nod along and just agree with you, right? And, then they're not getting the value from the team. Thank you. So we got a comment here from LinkedIn. Not heard of conversational turn taking. Thank you. Yeah, great. So that's a phrase that comes from the Google Project Aristotle. They did some research across lots of countries, lots of culture, and they found that the two things that really got people included was the psychological safety and the conversational turn-taking. So this has got research behind it to really help it land.
And previous to that, is in the Lord of the Flies, where they had a conch, didn't they? They had a shell, and they would hand it around to each other. And that was their conversational turn-taking. So it allowed people to contribute towards the vibe of the tribe.
Speaking stick, do they call it as well?
There's a speaking stick. Yeah, it's various different things. I mean, if you've got a stick, it's hard to hand it over virtually, but that's why this is much easier to adapt to.
Now, you're talking about virtual. So virtual is harder to get inclusion. It is more tricky. So just a few quick things to run through. If you're just starting people to interact, you can have a poll. So then people don't have to think too much, but you get them clicking on what they prefer. So polls are kind of lighter way to get interaction. Then you can give people, like we did earlier, A, B, C, D, give them an option to just choose one. So again, a light version of interaction. You can then start getting people into interacting with virtual whiteboards, where they can put up sticky post-its. Those are great, especially if they're anonymous and you're talking about something that is a little bit sensitive. Then people can put up anonymous post-its, and actually you can get their real thoughts out, which is just really good to do that. And then you can do hands up, those who agree, thumbs up, virtual thumbs up, however you want to do it, and get people engaging with you. And then more inclusive and more open, you'd have people speaking or people going into breakout rooms where they can speak openly, and then you come back to the main room and discuss the findings. So sort of on a scale of how much inclusion can you have? And generally, if you're in a massive meeting, you might choose some of those polls or breakout rooms. You can't have lots of people in a room together. It takes a lot of time. So you might want to break it down before summarizing. That would be our suggestion with that. So if you've got any extra thoughts or comments there, then please pop them into the comment box. And it looks like that idea has landed really well. Brilliant. Thank you. So let's move on to the next thing.
So we get the original visual was like people being left behind reading a map, not really understanding where they were. And some people haven't even caught up yet and don't know. This is like an opportunity to pause and let everybody catch up. So when you do a poll, it's like, oh, whatever you were saying just a minute ago, we've now punctuated that. So now everybody catches up. And you might lose different people in the next section because based on what they're interested in or what their part of this meeting is. But it's just an opportunity, literally, just to punctuate the conversation and everybody settles down and breathes and comes together on the next bit.
Brilliant. So that's kind of like unofficial signposting, which is one of the techniques to help with flow and focus. So the first technique is signposting. So like a poll is like unofficial signposting is what you're saying there. But you can actually also be official signposting. So you might say, right, we talked a lot about this SAS Simply Amazing structure in previous episodes. So you might say, right, now we've looked at why it's really important that we cover this topic. Let's move on to what are the three parts that make this work. Let's look at part one, part two, and part three. Let's go to part one now. And so what you do is you signpost people around your meeting or your presentation. So this is what an agenda's for, right? You very clearly go back to the agenda and say, we're on item three of the agenda. Have we closed off everything to do with item two of the agenda? And this is where you might get the thumbs up. Yes, we have. We're happy with that. Are we ready to move on to item three? So for virtual meetings, especially and longer meetings, it's really important for that reason, Will, to give those people left behind a chance to catch up. But also there's people drifted off and they've kind of lost where they are. Oh, right. Item three, they can catch up. Because we must all confess we have been lost in a meeting at some point, haven't we? I'm quite pleased when somebody said, oh, we're on page two or an agenda item three.
Yeah.
It's probably happened to all of us, hasn't it? So that's signposting, very important to do. And the other thing is active listening. So this really, you can't be engaged in meeting if you're not active listening, right? You've got to be active listening to be engaged in the meeting. It can be quite hard work, I think, when you do it properly. So it's quite exhausting in a longer meeting to actively listen to everything. If you're doing the conversational turn taking, you're listening to those points of view, you're processing. But active listening, people go, oh, I listen really well. I heard everything you said, Will. And they think that's active listening, right? Why isn't that active listening?
But were you listening? Yeah, we hear a lot. And as is talked about in the NLP communication model, that the amount of information that's flying into and around your brain at any one second is astronomical. So you can be hearing lots of things, but are you actively listening? So am I processing what's being said? Am I understanding the ask or the point that's being made? Rather than just allowing noise to enter your brain and calling that listening.
It's hard. It's hard when you do it for a long time. It's easy to drift off. But yeah, you need to bring yourself back in each time, don't you? Yeah. And sort of related to active listening is as you go around and you listen to people speaking, you know, this guy here with the glasses on, he's clearly not in the same place as these other people. So they're all talking about their hike and the trek. And this guy's talking about his monkeys, which obviously gets bonus points from me because I love talking about public speaking monkeys and mind monkeys. But it's not the topic of what they're discussing at that moment on that piece of the path. So what we suggest people do here is they go and put that item in the car park, especially if it's important. So let's assume talking about monkeys is important, as I always think it is. That's a good point. Let's put that in the car park. And the car park is a place where we put things, we must attend to it, we must come back to it. And we don't just put it there and forget about it, but we acknowledge then that that's a good point. We need to discuss it, but it's not what we need to be discussing right now. Because if we discuss that point right now, we go off down another path, then we never find our way back to that path, and then we get distracted, and then we just haven't got the right maybe people in the room to discuss that, or we're not in the right mindset, or we haven't got enough time, always run out of time. So that's the car park. So that might be another phrase. It'd be interesting. Have you heard of that phrase car park, or do you use something similar? Drop a little note there in the comments. Let us know if you use something similar. And if you don't, then how do you fancy using the car park? Top tip, though, is to let people know you're going to do the car park at the beginning of the meeting. This is one of the ways of working we're going to quickly refer to later. But in your ways of working, one of the beginning things you do at the beginning of the meeting, and Will, you're going to maybe tell us why we need to do this at the beginning of the meeting. We would say, is it okay if we use a car park so that if we talk about monkeys when we shouldn't be, we can put that into the car park? So Will, tell us, why is it so important to do that at the beginning of the meeting?
Well, if we don't, we could end up with lots of conversations that aren't relevant to the subject that we're talking about. So it allows people to think before they ask, rather than, oh, I've got Dee in a room for a minute and I must ask her the thing about her dog and where she walks the dog every day. It's not relevant to today's meeting. So I will think before I speak, because now there's a car park. It's an opportunity to mention it, but I don't have to get an answer right now. So we kind of back off a little bit as an audience member. But it does encourage interaction. So, you know, whether we talk about it now or whether we talk about it later, it's still inviting people to give their contributions. And saying it up front just really allows people to think, yeah, should I ask this now or should I ask it later? But also, if I do ask it now, I know it's going to get answered at some point. So again, yeah, psychological safety piece.
Yeah, so it's okay to ask anything, because if it's not relevant now, we can put it on the car park. That's no problem. Yeah. And some people have, I've done some webinars before where some of the senior people can have a habit of interrupting and putting people off of their path when they're presenting, which you can either deal with in the moment, but sometimes it might be more relevant to car park that. And if you said it at the beginning, you've got more chance of saying, ah, Will, you know the car park I talked about? How about we put that in there for now? And can you come back to me at the end of the meeting? And if I haven't covered it by then, I'd love to address it. Gives a bit more permission than suddenly going, oh, Will, I've invented this thing called car park because you just asked me a really awkward question and don't know how to answer it.
It's not as rude as saying, but I don't know why you've said that now. We can't answer that question.
Yeah,
get out of it. I'll park it. And Sherry just said, yeah, we park items for later, but love the idea of the car park. Yeah, it is more lighthearted and upfront. It means there's a, you know, there's a function there for those questions that come from left field, let's put it.
So we've worked together with many teams, actually, Will, where they didn't have many ways of working before we worked with them, or they had them, but nobody, you'd say, well, where are they? There's some in some drawer tucked away somewhere, not really used. And the thing is, when you don't have, good ways of working, you don't know how to disagree. You don't know how to challenge. You don't know how to have that psychological safety, especially with people who are more senior to you. And actually, I was thinking, you know, a lot of people who are more senior don't think they're that senior and don't know why you won't just say what you think. They don't realize that with their level of seniority comes that feeling that we need to fall in line with what you're saying. We almost need extra permission to question you. If you want to hear our voices, that's a whole nother training course. But this is assuming you do want to hear everyone's voice because you recognize everyone's got value. So we want to go from a team that has not very many ways of working to a team that has agreed ways of working. And we've worked with teams. Let's see if I can just make this a bit bigger for people to see. We've worked with teams before where they've come up after we've done this training and shown people the individual value. They've come up with anything to up to 20 ways of working for this particular team. And they put their ways of working here. And then they really believed in them. So they're not just like written down for no reason at all. They really believe in each one of those ways of working. They know why it's important and they know why it's relevant. So that's what we did you know, we can do with teams. We work with them and help people understand where they're important. And I think especially this ties in well with next week's, you know, people element of different styles, different personality styles. And then what we did with that particular company is we prioritized those ways of working. And then they did a survey before the training, or on the day of the training after they'd done their ways of working. And then 2 months later, they took a survey again and asked people what the scores were. And you can see that the scores increased in each of the three focus. Well, almost every score increased, but in the three focus areas, it was anything from about 16 to 31% increase in scores for the three focus areas. And I think it's really important that if you do these kind of ways of working, you do have to prioritize. You can't do all 20 at once. You can try, like they have done. They've accidentally done all 20 at once because they now believe it and they do it. But you really want to focus on three at a time. And some of our most successful clients are those that have done that, done the list, appreciate them all, but focus on the most important ones and then maybe move on a couple of months after that. So make sure you measure your ways of working if you're going to do something like that. So let's move on to action. I heard you asking people for their actions. So now is the time for action. Let us know what one action you're going to take, whether you're watching live or you're watching on replay. Please let us know. Just type it in the comments and we will get back to you. And if you've enjoyed today, then I would love for you to share this with some of your colleagues, maybe your family, maybe your friends. Please do share this with other people. And next week, I'd love for you to join us as well. So next week, we are joined. Will can't make it next week, doing something lovely. So I'm joined by the lovely Melanie Blythe, who I call Dom and other people call Melanie. So that's very confusing. But we're going to talk about style blindness and how your personality style can be your greatest strength, but also be a weakness. And it can cost you some progress with clients, with your career, with your goals, and to what to look out for there and how you can help with that. So thank you very much for watching today. If you've got any questions or feedback, please message us. Thank you. In the comment on LinkedIn, I'm going to use conversational turn-taking and the car park. Great points. Thank you. Well, thank you for joining in. Thank you for interacting with us. We love having live comments. That's fantastic. So we've enjoyed being with you. And thank you very much, Will, for joining me today. And take care, everybody. If you've got any questions, please drop us a message. Thank you for joining us on this previously live debrief show with Will Grover and I. We look forward to seeing you next time. And if you don't know, we're on podcast, Apple and Spotify, and we're also available on YouTube. Just follow the Dee Clayton channel and look for the debrief show. And that will have more visuals as well. So if you've listened to today's episode, you might want to check it out on YouTube as well. Please do join us again, and we look forward to seeing you next time. Until then, continue to bring out the best in yourself, your teams, and your communications.